I want to touch on something else that I've been hearing a lot of talk, which is regarding the Electoral College and the Senate. So the last few elections, if you look at them, Republicans have not won the popular vote.
You're tuning in to Big Guy Small Talk, where we have conversations and not interviews. Although sometimes we do have interviews.
What's up, people? Lots of news to talk about today. Lots of things to go over. But first, I just want to say thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting. Thanks for being you. Keep being awesome. And spread some positivity today, man. Let's not spread hate and anger. Let's just be loving and cool and kind. Let's give some high fives and some hugs, you know. Firm believer in those two H's, man. High fives and hugs. But anyways, I want to talk about four things today. I want to talk about just like a this day in history. I want to talk about a little bit, kind of touch on the Kavanaugh situation, just kind of my take on it. Not get too into the details and the weeds because, you know, everyone's probably aware of all the details. So I just want to kind of give my opinion. And then also talk about the fight from this weekend with Khabib versus McGregor and what the Nevada State Athletic Commission is saying and kind of what is happening as of this morning, what I read. And then also talk about the Electoral College and the Senate. You know, there's been a lot of talk about how they're bad for the country. Cool. So lots of politics, but I'll try to keep it positive and I'll try to keep it non-toxic, man. I'm not trying to point fingers. So that's like not the point of me talking about politics. Okay, so first thing, today in history, in 1949, and today is Tuesday, October 9th, 2018. And I guess in October 9th, 1949, Harvard Law School began admitting women. So that's cool. I went to Notre Dame for grad school, and it was like the one of the first colleges to start admitting women into its undergraduate program in the country. And that's pretty amazing. I love that a Catholic school took that initiative, especially Notre Dame. For those of you who keep up with Notre Dame or give a shit about Notre Dame, not a lot of people do. But for those of you who do, Notre Dame is like pretty progressive as far as how can we be inclusive. And I love that because that's how I see – I'm Catholic. So, excuse me. Ugh. So that's how I see the church, man, trying to be inclusive and loving. And, you know, I think Notre Dame does a good job of stepping forward and doing that stuff. But we're talking about Harvard. Yeah, so Harvard Law School began admitting women back in 1949, and I'm wondering who the first woman admitted to Harvard Law was. So I'm just going to Google that real quick. The first woman admitted to Harvard Law School, let's see. Women were first admitted, well, now it's saying to HLS in 1950 as part of the class in 1953. A painting of the woman from the class 1953 can be found in the Lehman Lounge at the Harvard Law School Library and is based off of a photograph entitled First Class of Female Graduates of Harvard Law School. So that's pretty cool that they have a painting there for that. But yeah, so good for them for doing that. We need that. We need opportunities for women. You know, I'm always saying, whenever we come out with studies about women going into certain fields, like, oh, we don't have enough women going into this field, or we, you know, so therefore women don't like that thing and men like it more, or men are just more apt for it. I just think we need more than, you know, less than 100 years of women having opportunities to actually enter all the fields that men can enter. So good job for Harvard for putting a crack in the glass ceiling. I won't say they broke it because I don't know. I'm not a woman. I don't know what their experiences are at Harvard, but I'm sure there's some bullshit there too. There's bullshit everywhere. So good job for Harvard. Let's keep moving forward. Now let's talk about Kavanaugh. So just to touch on this, CNN posted a report on Friday, October 5th, saying that the Kavanaugh probe, the FBI probe, was a cover-up. That it was a cover-up for a real investigation, and it was not actually a real investigation. I don't know if I agree or disagree, and frankly, I don't like, I'm back on that. I don't really want to have an opinion on this because it's such a controversial topic. I kind of like to stand back, and I don't know Kavanaugh. I don't know Ford. I don't want to say who's lying and who's not. But I do want to say that what I observe, you know, I identify more with conservatives, and seeing the way the conservatives talk about it is like the complete opposite language that they talked about with Hillary Clinton. Right, Hillary Clinton had this massive investigation, and they wanted more. Kavanaugh got a small investigation, and they said that was good enough. Hillary Clinton was not found guilty of anything. There was no evidence found. I don't know how I feel about that, but I think it's just anytime there's an investigation, I'm always skeptical. I always have the skeptical hippo eyes because you never know what happens. You never know what hands are being shook. I think I watch too many crime dramas where I think everything is corrupt. But if it's not, let's just say it's not. She wasn't found guilty of anything. But yet the Republicans were like, that doesn't mean she's not guilty. The FBI is covering it up. But with Kavanaugh, he wasn't found guilty of anything. And they're saying the exact opposite, right? Oh, he's clean. And so I find it funny that we... And likewise, this is true for, you know, this isn't just a conservative thing. This is party, people who are all about political parties, because you do have Democrats on the other side toting the opposite, right? Well, no, the FBI is covering it up, but yet there wasn't that language regarding Hillary. So I just think people should be, should have some more integrity when it comes to just everything, right? If we're going to talk about FBI investigations, let's be consistent how we talk about them. Let's have that consistency with skepticism. I think consistent skepticism is the best kind of skepticism. I think it's bad to be skeptical of one party and not the other. I think we should always be skeptical of anything or anyone in power. But that's me, man. I'm not perfect. I'm not a politician. I'm not a politics major. I'm not a socio-political dude. So feel free to tweet at me or inform me, like help me learn. You know, I don't want to have this platform and just say a bunch of dumb things every week. If you come at me with information and we talk about it, I'll happily put it on here. Like, I don't care. I just want to give people something to listen to, and hopefully they take something away from it. So it can be truth. Well, it should be truth. I want it to be truth. And I'm not the most informed person all the time. So I will say that also. And then apparently UN Ambassador Nikki Haley is resigning, which is pretty crazy. That's happening right now. I'm clicking on the link. So this is pretty nuts. It's on CNN.com if you want to check that out. But she's resigning, so I don't know why. More will come out later. We'll probably make a post about that. I want to touch on something else that I've been hearing a lot of talk, which is regarding the Electoral College in the Senate. So... the last few elections, if you look at them, Republicans have not won the popular vote, but yet we've won the Electoral College. And I say we because I voted Republican in the last couple elections. So I don't want to hide who I vote for. I don't think anyone should, man. I think we should always have a dialogue, not a diatribe. You know, we should be positive. And educate me, man, if you think I'm wrong. Educate me with love. You know, that I'll listen. I'll happily listen. But anyways, so I just wanted to give my perspective on the Electoral College and why I think it's a good thing and why I could also see how it could be abused, right? So one, I think the system of having an Electoral College isn't a necessary bad thing. I think we need to have something that breaks the idea of a popular vote. Popular votes are dangerous in a country where we have hundreds of really big cities and thousands of small towns. So our population is living... I mean, why we even still have one kind of form of government blows my mind, but we live in two vastly different worlds. You know, if you live in a big city, your world is... it's more diverse. You're seeing different kinds of jobs come in, right? You're not having, like... a lot of agriculture, you're not having a lot of oil, you're not having a lot of sort of like the small town jobs that I saw growing up, but you're seeing a lot more technology, right? I grew up in a small town, we have like no technology out there, and so just the whole vibe is different, right? big cities typically have more colleges in them, so you're getting people who have degrees, which means that their prospect to get jobs are jobs of a certain type are just higher than, you know, small towns where there's maybe a community college or kind of like a university that put a little site out there. But it's not like to get the jobs, like what I've noticed is my friends who have jobs that are in business, they typically move out. So they leave the small towns. So we have this very different kind of lifestyle in these two areas, right? Small towns versus big cities. And if we do a popular vote, then how I see it is a politician could really just hit those big cities, which have a very similar demographic, and campaign to them. And then that they could essentially just do campaigning, like really hit those areas hard and win the popular vote every time, because there's just enough people in those areas to do that. And people flock to those areas because there's just more stuff out there. Instead of us figuring out a way to put technology in small towns, and that's for a lot of reasons, but I won't get into that. And so I look at that, and I think the anything that's not a popular vote is good. I think kind of a republic aspect of this is beneficial, right? Where we're, yes, where everyone's vote is counted, but not everyone's vote counts. So that's, which is weird to me, which is why people don't vote. And so there's a lot of things that I could touch on for that, but I want to keep focused on the Electoral College. And so I just see it as a benefit. Now, it can be abused, right? Because we don't actually elect who goes into the Electoral College. And the votes may or may not reflect the breakdown of the state. So Texas is a very red state, but it has a lot of blue people in it because it has big cities. It has some of the biggest cities in America, right? It has Houston and Dallas and Fort Worth. San Antonio is not too big, but it is very blue. And so it's got a lot of, and then Austin. Oh my God, I forgot about Austin. Yeah, like the first blue city in this state. And so, like, essentially, the Electoral College may just give all of our electoral votes to the Republican Party because it's almost always going to win. And that may not be accurate, right? Like, maybe some votes need to be allocated towards the Democratic Party. Now, I don't keep up with the breakdowns, and I didn't research them before this as to how they went in the last election with Trump. So, you know, you might want to do your research on that. So I do think there's, like, ways to make it better. I'm not saying there isn't, but I don't think eliminating it and going to a popular vote is good. I always worry about popular votes, you know, when people say, well, we should give the people what they want. Well, I mean, people wanted a lot of bad things, right? Like, we can't always give the people what they want. People wanted the Holocaust. Like, a lot of people wanted the Holocaust to be real. And it was a populist movement. It was a huge populist movement. So I'm not saying, like, we're becoming the Holocaust, so we're going to do anything terrible. But I'm just using a very extreme example to get the point across that we should question the idea of being populist. Right, like we should just question it and look at it objectively, and not worry about which political party it benefits. I will say Bill Maher did a good talk on YouTube where he touches on power begets power. So he talks about the Republicans having the Senate, the House, the Supreme Court, and because of that, like gerrymandering, where Republicans like have that down to a science, where they break up districts and figure out how to get the Republican vote everywhere. That can pass well because they have power, and essentially it's never going to get voted down or like booted out. And so I see what he's saying, right? Like, we don't have a checks and balances if everything's consistently being owned by the House and the Senate, and everything's kind of like owned by one political party. So I do see like the worry of Democrats fearing progress. Like, yeah, we may not want universal health care, but maybe we need something that's making it more accessible for people, and we just may never get that, right? And so I see where someone on the left is like, dude, we're never going to see progress unless we have something extreme. And I feel you, man. I feel like if I was on the other side and I cared, you know, the issues that I really cared about, which, or rather, I do care about the issues, but if I had this, if I believed in the solutions that you believed in, I would fight for it just as hard. So I can definitely like understand where someone cares about it. These are big issues. They affect people's lives, and they need to be something that we all consider. that coming. That being said, if you're a Texas resident, make sure you you register to vote. I don't know who I'm going to vote for. I'm between third party candidate and Beto at this point. The third party candidate, I forgot his name at this point. I should tell you his name though, because he's a really cool candidate. So I'm just going to Google that. Third party candidate, Senate, Texas. And his name is, let's see, he doesn't look, I can't find him here. Ah, it could be this guy. Let's see, Kellen, nope, that's not him. Man, I read his views on things, and I really liked, Neil Dykeman. He's a Libertarian running for U.S. Senate, and he's got, like, very little support, unfortunately. What? I'm going to pause that. That's the story. So I'm looking at this on khoustin.com, khou.com, and this was published September 25th. But Dykeman, essentially, like, what I like about him, God, I hate this site. It just plays videos automatically. So stupid. Give people the option, man. We don't want to hear your crap. Like, don't just automatically play stuff. It's very frustrating. But what I do like is on his website, neildykeman.com. That's NEALDIKEMAN.com. You can go to issues. There's literally just a little menu thing at the top. You click on issues, and you can read all of his views for fiscal responsibility, tax reform, trade, local government, privacy, social issues, healthcare, immigration reform, national defense, and statement of purpose. And so what I like that he just puts it there. He was very smart in doing that, and I really like his views. I don't agree with all of them, but hey, man, that's kind of who I'm leaning towards, just because I agree more with his views than Beto or than Ted Cruz. And you can say I'm wasting my vote, but it's my vote, and so I want to do what I want with it. But it's still in the air, so no decisions have been made by me yet. Now, on to the Khabib McGregor fight stuff. So if you don't know, there's a big fight this weekend. Khabib Nurmagomedov, a UFC undefeated fighter, now 27-0, fought against Conor McGregor, who everyone knows by now. And he just absolutely obliterated him. He took him to town, man. He did what Khabib does, which is like pin people against the cage and just pound on them mercilessly. And then he eventually submitted him with a rear naked choke. But after that, there was a huge fight where he jumps into the crowd and attacked Dylan Danis, the grappling coach of Conor McGregor. Now, there's a lot of things that are rumors and speculation. A lot of people are saying Conor started it. There's video of Conor hitting teammates, and no one's really talking about that. But this is what the Nevada State Athletic Commission has said so far. So they said the function is to regulate unarmed combat within the United States of Nevada. And the events that occurred on October 6, 2018, at the conclusion of the Nurmagomedov-McGregor contest, the main event of UFC 229, are under investigation by the executive director, Bob Bennett. Neither the commission nor its staff, excluding executive director Bennett, will comment on matters under investigation. So they released a statement saying they will not comment yet. But there are rumors, and the commission confirmed that a formal complaint will be issued against McGregor, because they're saying that he did have a part in it. And I don't know if they're talking about the video evidence of him hitting people, or they're talking about him inciting violence with his language, right? Talking about Khabib's religion, talking about his family, his country. And, you know, Conor McGregor gets under people's skin, and this was no exception in this case. And so I don't know if they're putting onus on him for that reason or for the other reason. But that's it, man. I think that was a lot of news. So I, you know, want to thank you for listening. Let's see if we can find something great to end this on, you know. Ah, here we go. Published today, October 8th, 2018. Headline reads, humble innkeeper has given away 1,000 free nights worth $50,000 to hurricane evacuees. So this innkeeper in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, on the East Coast, has opened his doors to dozens of evacuees free of charge. To date, he's given away roughly 1,000 free nights to poor and vulnerable families. Not only that, but he welcomed their dogs, cats, and turtles too, regardless of the pet policy. Love thy neighbor, right? That's what you're supposed to do, Hux told CBS News. My mama taught me that a long time ago. So his name is Jarrett Hux, and he owns the Midtown Inn and Cottages in Myrtle Beach. I believe I would like to start. I'm going to see if there's a GoFundMe started for this. If not, I'm going to start one. And I'm going to post that on all of our social media stuff. But I'll check. There probably is one started because it's pretty amazing. But yeah, so his name is Jarrett Hux, and he owns the Midtown Inn and Cottages in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. And he's giving $50,000 away of expenses to take care of these people. And that's what we need, man. We need people to take care of each other. So good things are happening in the world. It's not all terrible. It's not all awful. Love your neighbor. Hug people. High five them. You're awesome. Don't forget that you are awesome and that you have gifts to give to the world. So good luck with everything. I'm going to conclude this podcast. I hope you have a great day. Thanks for supporting. Like, share, subscribe. Follow us on all social media at Big Guy Small Talk. But most of all, don't forget, you are amazing. And I'm out.